Today, how do we know that mortgage arrears are now rising in Australia? Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, now this post covering finance and property news. Well, being a philosopher can be a bitch because I want to keep asking the why question and not just accepting the first answer as complete and accurate. This is the case when considering mortgage arrears, which is what I want to explore today. The DFA mortgage stress analysis shows that more households are struggling with cash flow issues, with about half of owner-occupied mortgage borrowers making sacrifices to keep paying their bank. We see that arrears are still low but rising thanks to bank hardship schemes and then property holders deciding to sell to liquidate their assets and to repay the bank. But actually, data on mortgage arrears is pretty fluffy, and I think we need to understand more about this, especially at a time when there's been a call from the CEO of ANZ and others to reduce the mandated lending buffers to allow more people to borrow more funds. APRA releases aggregate data each quarter. The last was to the end of March 2024, and they said that high interest rates and prolonged inflation has continued to place pressure on borrowers. While most are continuing to adapt, there is a small but growing pocket of stressed borrowers. The ratio of non-performing loans remains low, reflecting sound asset quality. The ratio of non-performing loans rose 9 basis points to 1% over March 2024. While this represents 12 months of continuous increases in the non-performing loan ratio, the rate of increases has been gradual, and the increase in non-performing loans has been consistent across both retail and non-retail credit. Elsewhere, rating agencies have been tracking higher delinquencies for some cohorts from their securitization analytics. For example, Fitch Ratings released its Australian Mortgage Market Index, which says 0.48% of mortgage holders are in arrears by 30 to 59 days, as at the first quarter of the year. That's an increase of 0.3% from the previous quarter, taking the measure to the highest it's been since February 2016. That was the third successive quarter-over-quarter increase, with non-conforming arrears at their highest level since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic back in 2019. As a result, the proportion of homeowners falling behind on their mortgage repayments has hit an eighth-year high as persistent inflation and high interest rates put many household finances in a vice grip. And now the latest RBA bulletin just released contained a couple of significant articles relating to mortgage arrears and serviceability. The first, recent rises of housing loan arrears, shows that housing loan arrears rates have increased from low levels since late 2022, with banks expecting them to rise a bit further from here. High loan-to-value and debt-to-income loans are most at risk. No surprise there. The second, how the RBA uses the securitization datasets to assess financial stability risks from mortgage lending, makes the point that the data used relating to around one third of loans contains lags of up to 2 years, especially for highly leveraged loans, which limits the usefulness of that dataset. The RBA says that residential mortgages represents around two-thirds of Australian banks' domestic lending, and mortgage debt is typically the largest liability on the balance sheet of an Australian household. Actually, this is one of the highest shares of mortgage debt found in comparable Western countries, by the way. Therefore, stress in the household sector can have a material impact on financial stability in Australia if a sufficiently large number of mortgagors were in negative equity and defaulted on their loans. Lenders could face widespread losses. This could lead to lenders sharply restricting the supply of credit to even very sound borrowers, disrupting economic activity and resulting in rising unemployment. This feedback between financial stress of indebted households, lending, and economic activity could be costly for all households, and those costs could be even higher if a lack of confidence in the safety of deposits led to broader instability in the financial system. However, financial stress among households does not automatically lead to financial instability, they said. Now, another point to note here is that household consumption, which makes up more than half of the Australian economy, is potentially under pressure because of the high debt burden. A separate point to the direct financial stability issue. In fact, data from the RBA and elsewhere shows that consumption is flat in real terms for younger cohorts, many of whom have mortgages, while older mortgage-free cohorts are spending freely, one of the many distortions in the current economic environment, which helps explain why retail momentum is still stronger than many expected. Now, the RBA showed that highly indebted homeowners are increasingly struggling to pay their mortgages, with more borrowers falling behind as high interest rates stretch household budgets. So about 1 in 40 owner-occupiers with loan-to-value ratios above 80% were more than 90 days behind on their mortgages. That was in May 2024. The arrears rate for highly indebted borrowers has risen sharply over the past 18 months, far outstripping the more modest rise in mortgage delinquencies seen across the entire pool of owner-occupier loans. This largely reflects their smaller buffers, making them less resilient to changes in their mortgage payments or budgets. Homeowners with loans worth more than four times their income are also increasingly struggling to pay their mortgages, with about 1.5% of borrowers in this cohort more than 90 days overdue on their mortgage. And the RBA found that the main drivers of the increase in arrears were the current challenging economic conditions and the aging of the loan pool. The cumulative chance of a borrower experiencing a negative shock increases over the life of the loan. The arrears rate among borrowers who took out loans at very low rates during the pandemic has risen rapidly, but was still below the national average in May. And those borrowers are considered risky because many were never assessed by banks for their ability to withstand a 4.35% cash rate. Nationally, the arrears rate among all variable rate owner-occupier loans was still less than 1%, which was in line with the pre-pandemic levels. But the bank's research foreshadowed a further rise in mortgage delinquencies. Banks expect housing loan arrears rates to increase a little further, but to remain low relative to history, based in part on their latest assessments of the economic outlook. This assessment is broadly consistent with RBA and analysis, which shows that nearly all borrowers are expected to be able to continue servicing their debts, even if budget pressures was to remain elevated for an extended period. The Australian Securities Investments Commission, by the way, lashed banks and non-bank lenders back in May for making it unnecessarily difficult for struggling borrowers to get help. Around one third of customers who approached their home loan lender for help because they were struggling with repayments have dropped out of the hardship process due to delays and the information required, said the corporate regulator. And what we also saw was that later, after the 12 months of support, borrowers are actually getting into even deeper doo-doo. So now let's look at where the RBA gets its data from for the analysis they publish. To assess developments in housing loan arrears, the RBA monitors data collected by the Australian Prudential Regulatory Authority, APRA, and loan-level data from the RBA securitisation dataset. While APRA provides a representative view of trends in the bank's aggregate housing loan arrears rates, the more granular securitization dataset allows for a deeper understanding of developments in arrears rates for certain types of loans. To track how household financial stress is evolving, they focus on the arrears rates among variable rate owner-occupied borrowers. Variable rate borrowers have been more exposed to rising interest rates than fixed rate borrowers, and owner-occupiers tend to have fewer margins of adjustment compared to investors. Investors can more easily sell their property if they encounter debt serviceability challenges. Assessing the share of variable rate owner-occupier borrowers 90 or more days in arrears helps the bank look through the volatility among earlier stage arrears, which can be administrative or temporary in nature, and focus on more persistent financial stress. Rather inconveniently, this takes us to the other article in the bulletin. Securitization data collected by the RBA, forming the securitization dataset on residential mortgage-backed securities, is a condition of eligibility as collateral in repurchase agreements with the RBA. These loan-level datasets are provided monthly and are both more timely and granular, they say. The data provides detailed information about each loan that can be used to help to form a view of financial health of mortgagors. As lenders can face incentives to select certain types of loans for securitization, though, or to ensure the performance of loans after issuance, the data may not be fully representative of all mortgages in the Australian market. In other words, the loans are handpicked for securitization. The securitization dataset contains a sizable share of all mortgages in Australia, with the majority of loans from self-securitization. As at May 2024, the dataset contains about 1.7 million individual mortgages with a scheduled balance of almost $700 billion. By value, that represents roughly one-third of total outstanding housing credit in Australia. The majority of loans, around 92% of balances in the dataset, are from ADIs, with around 85% from major banks' self-securitizations. Self-securitizations are not sold to investors, but are instead held entirely by the originating ADIs for the use as collateral in the RBA's market operations, including the Term Funding Facility, the TFF. The remaining 15% of balances are market securities, equally split between ADIs and other financial institutions. For the most part, those shares have been relatively stable, but structural changes, such as changes to the market operation for which securitization can be used as collateral, can change the composition of the dataset. For example, this occurred when the TFF was introduced in 2020, which led to a notable increase in self-securitized deals in the dataset. These self-securitized deals have revolving pools. ADRs using self-securitization adds or remove loans as needed to the underlying asset pool to calibrate the value of collateral potentially required and to replace loans as they amortize or are discharged. There are some strict rules limiting the active management of such loan pools, by the way. These incentives and structural features of the securitization market and the securitization dataset means that the dataset could be materially different from the broader mortgage market. As a result, relying solely on the dataset could provide a biased assessment of financial stability risks from mortgage lending. While the securitization dataset appears to track high-level trends in the mortgage market well, substantial lags between loan origination and their appearance in the dataset needs also to be considered when using the data. On average, it currently takes about 1.5 years for a loan to be securitized and thus enter the dataset after origination. This lag actually increased substantially between 2016 and 2018. Those lags can particularly limit the usefulness of the securitization dataset to monitor new lending to highly leveraged loans that are particularly risky. Indeed, those loans enter the dataset with particularly long lags. It can take around 20 months for loans with high leverage, loan-to-value ratios or LVR greater than 80%. That's an important indicator of default risk of the loan to enter the dataset. Therefore, those loans are significantly underrepresented in the dataset relative to their cohort in the broader mortgage market, as, for example, captured in the APRA data, often for up to 2 years. That's consistent with ratings agencies' policies discouraging high LVR loans. By contrast, however, loans with high leverage relative to income, the loan-to-income ratio, the LTI, greater than 6, could be generally overrepresented in the dataset by around 10%. This overrepresentation becomes stronger with the age of such loans as they are progressively securitized and enter the dataset. The underrepresentation of loans originated with high LVRs in the securitized dataset also leads to an underrepresentation of loans with high outstanding or dynamic LVRs when compared to the loan book of the four major banks, as reported in their profit reports. Specifically, low LVR loans, loans with an LVR less than 6%, are overrepresented in the dataset relative to banks' balance sheets, consistent with lower LVRs at origination and a decrease in LVRs due to strong housing price growth over recent years. By contrast, loans with high outstanding LVRs, LVRs greater than 80%, are underrepresented in the dataset. And this underrepresentation extends to the share of loans in negative equity. While this suggests that the risks in the dataset from high leverage are understated, the bias for the riskier loans in negative equity is relatively small, with recent estimates suggesting that around 0.1% of loans in the dataset are in negative equity, compared with around 1% cited in major banks' profit reports. But given the securitization data sets includes detailed information on borrower incomes and required mortgage payments, it can be used to estimate borrowers' spare cash flows. However, borrowers' incomes are only recorded at loan origination and must be grown forward, and their essential expenses must be approximated, for example, by using the household expenditure measure, the HEM, from the Melbourne Institute. Comparing the estimates from the securitization dataset with those from the HILDA survey suggests that the dataset provides conservative estimates of the share of borrowers with cash flow shortfalls. Around 3% of mortgagors were estimated to be in cash flow shortfall in the dataset to December 2022, that's to align with the survey period of HILDA, compared to 2.5% in the HILDA survey. But of course, HILDA is heavily delayed. The dataset is particularly conservative for borrowers with higher mortgage or income quartiles, with around 5% of borrowers in the second mortgage or income quartile estimated to find their income insufficient to cover their mortgage and essential expenses, compared with less than 1% using the HILDA data. This likely reflects that incomes in the dataset are underestimated, either because mortgagors experience stronger income growth than assumed in those estimates, or because some borrowers underreport their incomes when applying for a loan, or both. Or could it be that some people overreport their incomes? We've already heard previously of the old lie loan story. Now, within the securitization dataset, there's also detailed and timely data on prepayments into offset and redraw facilities attached to each loan, and the data can be used to monitor the distribution of borrowers' savings in those accounts in near real time. As a share of outstanding mortgage credit, it says payment buffers, that's an important indicator of resilience of households to weather shocks in their income or expenses, in the dataset are broadly similar to the broader mortgage market, as captured in the APRA data. Flows into and out of offset and redraw accounts can also be compared with aggregate values from APRA statistics, which shows that savings behaviours of borrowers in the dataset closely matches those of the broader mortgage market. The securitization dataset can also be used to monitor trends in loan arrears in a timely way, and the detailed loan level data allows for further disaggregation than is possible using arrears data reported to APRA. However, there's a divergence between aggregate arrears rates in the dataset and those observed in the APRA data, and that suggests that there needs to be great caution used when interpreting the trends of more disaggregated samples. The securitization dataset can be usually used to monitor trends in aggregate arrears rates well, despite the level of arrears tracking below that of the broader mortgage market. And in normal times, this difference is in the order of about 10 basis points. This difference is consistent with the higher average quality, those with lower LVRs, of loans observed in the dataset. However, policy responses to significant changes to the economy can trigger a change in the composition of the securitized loan pool, requiring caution in interpreting trends in the data. The recent COVID-19 pandemic illustrates this point. When arrears rates for self-securitized loans decreased while rates in the broader markets increased, this can partially be explained by the increase in self-securitized loans entering the securitization dataset in early 2020, with newer loans typically having lower arrears rates because the probability of borrowers encountering adverse circumstances accumulates over time. However, the aggregate arrears rate still fell in the dataset, even when excluding the newly added self-securitized loans. The potential for arrears rates to diverge substantially means that it's important to consider where changes in the composition of the securitization datasets are driving developments in arrears for different types of loans and borrowers in the dataset. So if you stand back and just think about this for a minute, what we're saying is that the very granular data that the RBA is reliant on to try and get below the hood of arrears is deeply flawed. It's flawed because the information is filtered as securitized loans. There's a timing difference in terms of information coming in as to when the loans were actually written. And there are other factors too which can influence the accuracy of the information. Despite what the RBA claims, the truth is that we don't have a good handle on the true story about arrears. The other story that we should be focusing on, and again, this is not caught in either the APRA or the securitization data, is the pressure being applied by the banks to homeowners because they are unable to service their mortgages. This is not forced sale. It's not even defaults necessarily, but it is heavy pressure being put on people to sell their properties and to repay the bank. And to my mind, this is where a lot of the focus should be. But the bottom line is this: given the current economic conditions that we have in Australia, the expectations of higher rates for longer, as I discussed yesterday, we are going to see more and more households getting into difficulty and ultimately having to sell their properties. Whether this translates into financial instability or higher levels of recorded defaults is a moot point in my view. We should be taking much more account of what real households are experiencing now, which of course is what my stress data is trying to do. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.